it's a fascinating book. You've got lots and lots of chapters in here. One you didn't have, Michael Moritz, was luck. And I wondered, how much of leadership is down to being in the right place at the right time?
Some of leadership and some of life is undoubtedly due to luck. But you don't build a very successful life on the bricks of luck. You build a very successful life and career like Sir Alex has had by lots of other things that are very disassociated with luck. Hard work, perseverance, knowledge about a particular pursuit, great degree of obsession, ability to hire people, motivate people, communicate clearly with them, exert discipline. There are lots of other things. And luck clearly is an element, but in the grand scheme of things, it's a small element.
One of the reasons I asked that is because, as anyone who knows football closely will know, that Sir Alex's first couple of years at Manchester United were tinged with almost no success whatsoever. And in a modern footballing environment, he might well have got sacked. But in the mid-80s, his club persevered with him and allowed him to build the foundations from which United grew. Have we, as a society, do you think, become more impatient?
Undoubtedly, that's the case. But in the 1980s and 1990s, for that matter, there were plenty of managers who were summarily dismissed by impatient owners in the various leagues. And there was a huge turnover of managers throughout the time that Sir Alex managed United. And he clearly, and he's the first person to admit this, one of the great gifts that he was given was at United and also at Aberdeen beforehand, was to have owners of clubs who had placed their trust and faith in him and were prepared to be patient even if the results in the short term weren't what everybody wanted.
And that trust, do you think that came because of his own resolve? I mean, famously, he's the son, a son of Govan, and a very strong-willed man. Is that one of the marks of leaders, is they believe in themselves more than anything?
It's one of the, you put your finger on it, it's one of the great hallmarks of leadership, is having the courage of your own conviction and being willing to try and do the impossible and tread a path that perhaps is unpopular. And being prepared to stick to it. But I think people aren't given trust. They earn trust. And Sir Alex earned the trust of the owners at Aberdeen and at United.
Would he have made a good chief executive of Manchester United, do you think?
He was the chief executive of everything that had to do with football affairs at United, and I think if life had led him differently and he'd gone into the business world, he would have been a very successful chief executive.
Would he? In let's say you invest heavily in tech. Let's put Sir Alex Ferguson, Eddie's pomp in his 40s, into Silicon Valley. Would he have done well?
Let's have different circumstances and imagine that the technology industry had flourished between Glasgow and Edinburgh in the 1950s, and Sir Alex had had a technical education and for some reason had got interested in technology. I'm sure he would have flourished in that setting.
As I said, he's a son of Govan. You knew Steve Jobs of Apple well, a son of refugees. Your own parents fled from Nazi Germany. Is there a trace we can put to someone's background that marks them out as a future great leader?
I'm a big believer in the fact that people who have had come from tough circumstances and have been reared in an atmosphere where things haven't been handed to them and that they've had to fight against a certain degree of difficulty and odds, many of those people go on to do very remarkable things. But there are also other examples of people like Bill Gates in the technology world at Microsoft or Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook who were raised in comfortable middle-class settings and have the same sort of drive as people like Sir Alex.
This is probably an impossible question, but what is that then? What is that thing that unites Sir Alex Ferguson and Mark Zuckerberg, let's say?
It's two things. It's an obsession with a particular pursuit. And the second is the desire to attain perfection.
That's not always the combination that will make somebody terribly nice. Does that mean that lots of our sort of most successful leaders are not necessarily blessed with warm personalities?
Well, so Alex has got a very warm personality and is a man, people who don't know him well might be surprised to learn this, but a man full of charm and grace and compassion. For all remarkable people in whatever walk of life they aren't necessarily the easiest of personalities. Boring people don't do unusual things. Bland people don't do unusual things.
Do great leaders always do unusual things? Do they keep you on your toes?
Yes, because they persuade people to do things that they never thought that they were capable of doing.
And I wonder also, you talked there about the obsessive pursuit of perfection. And of course, you can't get to perfection. does that make it, perhaps not in the case of Sir Alex, who's know-nothing as a sort of garrulous red wine drinking man, but for other leaders, does that make it a difficult and sometimes lonely life, pursuing something that maybe you're destined never to achieve?
I think every leader, including Sir Alex, has moments of loneliness. Steve Jobs, you mentioned just now, was an intensely lonely man throughout his life. He was always an outsider, never surrounded himself with, didn't have lots of friends, had a few very close friends, but that was about it. And always felt, I think, deep down, unfulfilled, and that he, no matter how great and dramatic his achievements had been, had always, always fallen a bit short of the perfection that he sought.
That's in itself terribly sad, that, Michael, isn't it? That someone like Steve Jobs, who the rest of us would universally say was a man of extraordinary achievement, should feel that he hadn't quite done what he should have done.
But then, it was a great gift that he gave to all the rest of us that he was propelled by those sorts of impulses, because otherwise we wouldn't all have experienced either the movies that he made to make at Pixar or all these wonderful products at Apple that have come into our daily lives.
Now, you talk about other leaders here. we should say your own track record is fairly formidable. When you were writing this book, when you were analysing leadership, how much soul-searching did you do about the way you run Sequoia Capital?
Writing about somebody else in a role that you yourself occupy is a very revealing preoccupation and teaches you a lot about, or causes you to reflect a lot about your own strengths and particular weaknesses. So to some extent, even though it's not obvious in the book, it was a journey of self-reflection, co-authoring this book with Sir Alex.
And where did that journey of self-reflection take you?
Wishing that I had thought about a lot of these topics and things and distilled them and organized them in my mind at the age in my 20s or early 30s rather than in my early 60s.
What would you have done differently then? If you'd read this book in your early 30s, what would you have done?
I would have hoped that I had come to understand that people in their 30s react emotionally in particular ways that you don't when you have got more maturity and you've seen more of life and you're in your 40s and 50s. So that would be one thing. And then secondly, probably being more tuned in to, particularly when you're leading an organization, the particular emotional needs of different individuals.
That's interesting. I want to ask you a couple of things about the world of tech, because it's one that you know very well. You saw very early on. I just have this theory, Michael Moritz, that Apple, Google, Amazon and Facebook will one day just run everything. Am I wrong?
Including the BBC, I doubt it.
Maybe I should say I have a theory.
Well, yeah,
they'll run most things.
If that worries you, you can take great solace in the fact that there aren't any